Hi, everybody. Okay, so we are looking at together today, Chelek Yud, the second Sicha, Parshas Vayeshev. Okay, so this is a Rashi Sicha. And just to drop a background here, so this takes place, we're familiar with that Yehuda, two of his sons marry Tamar, and both of them die because of the choices that they've made. And instead of marrying her off to his third son, instead he tells her to go like wait out her widowhood in her father's home until the third son will be old enough. And this then the pasuk tells us, "Vayaged leTamar," and it was told to Tamar, "Hinei chamech oilat timnasu lagoyis." Behold, your father-in-law is going up to Timnah to shear his sheep. And what does Rashi tell us on these words? Regarding Shimshon, it is said, and then Rashi quotes from Shoftim, Vayered Shimshon Timnasai, descended. Shimshon went down to Timnah. And then Rashi explains the discrepancy. How is it that Yehuda went up and Shimshon went down? Yeshevis. This city, Timnah, sat in the slope of a mountain. Oilin la mikan. So depending on where you were located, you either went up to Timnah like Yehuda, or you came down to Timnah like with Shimshon, right? So anybody that's learned a number of Rashi sichas, there's a few questions that will immediately pop into your minds, and let's look at them, okay? So the first question the Rebbe asks is that this contradiction, the idea of Yehuda going up to Timnah, has already been mentioned in the previous pasuk. So if this truly is what's bothering Rashi, then why didn't Rashi come in on it and explain it in the earlier pasuk? So that's our first question. Our second question is that we know Rashi's style, and Rashi addresses the current dilemma. Meaning, yeah, it's true. When eventually I'm going to get to learning about Shimshon, being the astute student that Rashi hopes that I am, I will suddenly be noticed that there's a contradiction. Wait a second, didn't we learn one time about the city Timnah and Yehuda went up and now it says that Shimshon went down? But right now, this kind of elusive Ben Chamish Ben Mikra, who Rashi is addressing this commentary to, he's unaware of the story of Shimshon. And so this problem does not bother him. So why is it necessary for Rashi to resolve a dilemma, a seeming contradiction that we are not even aware of is a contradiction yet? Okay? And then the third question that the Rebbe asks is on the wording of Rashi. And again, I'm just going to repeat that because Rashi follows, copies down, excuse me, the Dibur HaMatchil from the Pasuk Oyla Timnasa. And then he writes, "Ubeshimshain hu Omer." And the Rebbe asks, "Is it really necessary for Rashi, who's always so concise and precise, to add these words, 'Ubeshimshain hu Omer'? Why doesn't Rashi just write 'Uksiv' as it is written?" And then the words itself, "Vayered Shimshon Timnasa," tell us immediately who it is that we're talking about. Why does Rashi have to add the words? Ubeshimshain hu aimer. Then the Rebbe goes on, and the Rebbe asks some more questions. And the Rebbe says that regarding this contradiction of Yehuda oila timnasai and Shimshon going down to Timnah, we actually find in the Gemara three different explanations. The first explanation that the Gemara offers is that the reason it talks about Shimshon going down is because as a result of Shimshon's trip to Timnah, it ended up causing him a spiritual descent. So it wasn't that he physically descended, but rather spiritually he descended because we know that what resulted after his trip to Timnah was that he ultimately met these Plishtim women and he marries them and we know that they lead to his death, right? So his trip to Timnah was reflective of a spiritual descent. In contrast to Yehuda, this trip to Timnah was a spiritual ascent because ultimately what would evolve from this trip is that Peretz and Zerach would be born. And we know that there's tremendous giants that came as a result, spiritual giants that came as a result of the birth of these two twins Peretz and Zarah. So Yehuda, it talks about going up because Yehuda was a spiritual ascent. Shimshon, it talks about going down because it was a spiritual descent. Hence, the different terminology in each scenario. The second explanation that the Gemara offers is that there were actually two different cities with the same name. One, Timna, was located on the top of the mountain. So clearly, if you wanted to go there, you had to travel up. The other Timna seemed to be located more like in a valley on the bottom. So if you wanted to go to that Timna, then you travel down. So perhaps you could say that Shimshon and Yehuda each visited a different Timna. Shimshon traveled down and Yehuda traveled up. The third explanation the Gemara offers, which you'll see in a moment, is actually the one that Rashi, okay, brings us, is that there was only one Timna. And this one Timna was located on the slope of a mountain. So depending on where you were coming from, you either had to go up like Yehuda. Clearly, Shimshon lived in a different location. So when he wanted to go to this very same Timna that generations earlier Yehuda had climbed up to, he had to climb down. So we see that of the three explanations that that the Gemara brings, Rashi, in his commentary, chooses the third one, right? Which, of course, begs the question, why? Why does Rashi choose the third one? What is it about the third one that has an advantage? When really, on the face value of things, you would think that the first two were more preferable. Because the fact that they're both first and second would, in a sense, indicate that they're the more likely option. They are the one that is closest to the pshat. And we know that Rashi's goal is, ani loy boy ela lepshutoy shel mikra. So if we have three options, and the first one, the second, and the third, each one in that order, one, the first is closer, second and third, why does Rashi choose the third one, seemingly the most removed from the pshat, when he has these other options? Okay. That leads us to those of you that want to look inside the Sicha while we're learning it, after we're learning it. I'm at Gimel. I'm going to call out which ICS I'm at so that it's easier for you to follow along. So the Rebbe goes on to tell us that we know that Rashi's primary goal is not to resolve the discrepancy, meaning the contradictory terms of one going up and one going down, but rather to solve a question that arises here in this pasuk. And what is that question? The question is, why is it even necessary for the pasuk to tell us this detail? Like, why do we need to know that Tamar was told your father-in-law, Ayla Timnasai? Does it really make some kind of difference to the storyline? And Rebbe brings an example from the Akedah. How at first, Avram Avinu was told, and the pasuk describes, "Va'aleu al echad haharim," ascend to one of those mountains. And then the pasuk tells, "Va'yalach al hamakam," and he went to the place, and then he arrived at the place. And there's no real difference. The pasuk doesn't continue to tell us in which direction he went, because there's no nafka minna to the storyline. So why here does that matter, right? And that's what Rashi is trying to resolve. He is not concerned about the fact that perhaps it was different when we come to Shimshon, because as we mentioned, we're unfamiliar with Shimshon. But the Ben Chamash LeMikra, Ben Mikra has read about the Akedah, for example, and he's read about different travels in the Psukim up until now. And suddenly he says, wait a second, there's a detail here that seems to be unnecessary. Why? And that is what Rashi is coming to tell us, right? So first, the Rebbe points out that in the previous pasuk, the pasuk that I had mentioned earlier, where we hear at first the detail of Yehuda going up, it's actually the Torah itself narrating. And why is this important? Let's read the pasuk together. Vayirbu hayamim, and many days passed. Vatamas vashua, Ashes Yehuda, and the wife of Yehuda dies. Vayinacham Yehuda, and as a means of comfort, he goes up to oversee the shearing of his sheep. And he takes with him for company his friend, and they go up to Timna. So this pasuk, which precedes the pasuk on which our Rashi is based, and which our Sicha is based, tells us the detail of Yehuda going up. So, and who's narrating here, of course? The Torah itself is narrating. So in this Pasuk, which is not our Pasuk, so to speak, but the Pasuk before our Pasuk, it is possible to explain the word Vayal Yehuda, Timnasai, Vayal Gizayzay Tzayna, Timnasai, to mean actually a spiritual ascent, because the Torah is narrating. So it's perfectly acceptable for the Torah to be in tune with and aligned with Yehuda's inner intention and Yehuda's spiritual journey. And it makes sense for the Pasuk to be telling us that he would spiritually rise from this trip, especially because this aligns with what we saw in the beginning of the Parsha, where we were told, again, by the text, where the Pasuk itself, the Torah itself narrates, and it says, Vayered Yehuda me'ez achiv. Yehuda descended from amongst his brothers. And we know that as a result of the whole story of Mechiras Yosef, where Yehuda had played a leading role, because he was the one that had suggested ultimately that they sell him, the brothers were kind of like disappointed in his leadership. And it says, Vayered Yehuda, he went down, he left his brothers. Why? Because in their eyes, they had sort of demoted him. So it would make sense that now the Torah is telling us that Yehuda is once again kind of ascending to the place spiritually where he had once descended. But here in our Pasuk, and let's just read that Pasuk again, just a moment, I'm looking for it. What does it tell us? I'm sorry. Vayaged l'Tamar, and it was told to Tamar, meaning the Yentes of the city are telling Tamar, Tamar, hine chamech ala Timnasa, you know, your shmer. He's going up to Timnah to shear his sheep. So there's no way that the Yentes of the town would know what exactly, you know, Yehuda's inner spiritual trajectory was. So when they were telling Tamar, they had to be telling her an actual fact, meaning what they knew. They said, he's going to Timnah. And why did they tell her where? Why does the Pasuk have to tell us what they told her exactly? And why did they have to tell her exactly? Because it's actually critical to the storyline, because we know that ultimately what's going to happen, Tamar is going to wait on the side of the road, and Yehuda is going to notice her there, et cetera, et cetera. And then ultimately, through that, Peres and Zerah are going to be conceived. So the only way that Tamar's plan could come to fruition, if she knows exactly in which direction, which route Yehuda is taking. And the Pasuk tells us to bring our attention to sort of foreshadow what's about to play out. Yes, this is actually a very, very important detail. Okay, so first of all, that helps us understand why Rashi does not bring the first explanation in the Gemara. Because the first explanation in the Gemara, the fact that one ascended and one descended spiritually, you could not apply that to this second Pasuk, to our Pasuk, because for two reasons. First of all, how would the Yentes have known? And second of all, that still wouldn't have guided Tamar to know where exactly she had to stand, right? So, okay, so Rashi, like we said, he's not here to resolve the discrepancy, but he's here to tell us to resolve the question that arises, right? Now, the reason why Rashi also opts out of using the second option in the Gemara, okay, we've already eliminated why Rashi couldn't use the first option, and now the Rebbe is going to help us understand why Rashi does not use the second option. And the Rebbe says it's because of how simple, so to speak, it was described to Tamar, right? And the Rebbe explains that if it were Taka, two different cities with the same name, then that would have been worked into the very name itself. And we see later in Yeshua, the Sicha brings an example where it says Bet Choron Tachton and Bet Choron Elyon, right? So we have two cities with the same name, but the fact that one was below and one was above was worked into the very name of the city, like that became its name, right? So the fact that Pasuk just tells us, and Tamar was told, Oyla Timnasoi, like Just Ola Tumnasa, without Ola Tumnasa Elyon or Ola Tumnasa Tachton, that's one proof for Rashi that clearly we're not talking about two different cities. And again, that sort of brings us to the second reason the Rebbe explains, which, you know, somewhat similar. The fact that it was just the name, just simply put as such, was obvious that it could not be mixed up with another cities, right? When you have two neighborhoods that have very similar sounding names, you often add another description to it so people don't get confused. And so the fact that it didn't have the word Tachton or Elyon attached to it, and the fact that it just said Timna, you know, Stam, just like that, and the one on another detail that Rebbe adds over here is that if the Taka had been two cities with the same name, excuse me a sec, it's very unlikely that they would be in such close vicinity of one another because exactly what we just said. It would be just too confusing, right? I know, like here in Eretz Yisrael, for example, they start a neighborhood and then the neighborhood grows. So they name the neighborhood Ramot Aleph, Ramot Bet, Ramot Gimel, etc. So it has the same name, but the Aleph Bet, and you also have Elyon and Tachton, new, old, might have the same name, but you have additional description hooked onto it so that it should not get confused. And the fact that this pasuk just tells us Oyla Timnasi Azay is proof to Rashi that it clearly we're not talking about two different cities. We're talking about one city that was located on the slope of the mountain. So now we understand why Rashi chooses the third explanation in Gemara. But nevertheless, the Rebbe still says, after all is said and done, it's like so far-fetched to actually build a city in the slope of a mountain, right? We know there are many advantages to building a city on the top of a mountain, right? So what, of course, is the biggest advantage of building a city on the top of the mountain is the fact that you have a tremendous advantage when it comes to defense. So even though it's true that getting supplies up there is very difficult and traveling up there might be difficult, and it will obviously affect the economy because less people will be just happen to be coming through, right? But nevertheless, especially back in the day, you know, when they had much less ways of defending themselves, height was one of their biggest advantages. So certainly there was advantage to the top of the mountain. Obviously, there's advantages to the bottom of the mountain. It's true, it's harder to defend oneself over there on the bottom of the mountain. But, you know, war wasn't something that happened every day. Life happened every day. So sometimes being on the bottom of the mountain has a lot of advantages. People can get there, it's easy to get supplies. So all the kind of disadvantages of the top of the mountain are a tremendous advantage on the bottom of a mountain. A slope of a mountain is nishtahinu nishtaher. You don't have the advantages of defense because your enemy could be higher than you. And you don't have the advantages of being on the bottom of the mountain because it's still a schlep. People are not just memela passing through. So why in the world would somebody build a city in the slope of a mountain? So that's why expecting this pushback, so to speak, that's why Rashi brings in the additional words of Shimshain Hu Oimer, right? Remember we had asked that was our third question in the opening of the Sicha, Shimshain Hu Oimer, because Rashi wants to tell us, if you're going to suggest that maybe we could come up with a solution, maybe we could split Yehuda and Shimshon, and so to speak, and so like say like this, regarding Yehuda, it was taka, a physical ascent, because we see that the pasuk is described by the yentes, and how in the world would they know? B'Shimshon, it says, B'Shimshon Hu Aymer, the pasuk itself is narrating. So maybe you could say that Shimshon was a spiritual descent, and Yehuda was an actual physical ascent. So you could argue that Timna was located on the top of the mountain. Yehuda Taka traveled physically upward. Shimshon didn't travel down, so to speak, Begashnias, but Beruchnias he traveled down. And it's possible to get away with saying that with Shimshon because the Torah, the Navi itself, is narrating. Therefore, to push back on that possible argument, Rashi sort of preempts it by saying Shimshon Ha'aymer, as if to say, throughout the story of Shimshon, over and over again, we are told that Yerid Shimshon Timnasa, that Shimshon went down to Timna. And if a story repeats something over and over again, it's hard to say that every single time it's talking about a spiritual descent. about a spiritual descent and the same story you could tell us once. So clearly, it has to also be referring to a physical descent. And if Yehuda is going up physically and Shimshon is coming down physically, then clearly we're only left with the third explanation of the Gemara, even though it's furthest from the Pshat, so to speak, because it's true to build a city in the slope of the mountain is far-fetched. But nevertheless, that is what Rashi tells us. So before we get to the Yayin Shel Torah, let's just review quickly the three questions that we opened up with. So the first question was, this contradiction appears in the previous pasuk. So we resolved that by saying that in the previous pasuk, you can explain that it was Yehuda spiritually ascending because it's the pasuk itself narrating. So the pasuk would know Yehuda's inner spiritual journey. And especially, like we said, it aligns with what we have been told earlier that Yehuda went down. Our second question was, why do we resolve a dilemma that has not yet arisen, i.e. a contradiction that has not yet arisen? And we're told that the Rebbe teaches us that, no, Rashi's not here to resolve about Shimshon. The question that arises here is, why is this detail important? And we now understand that this detail is critical in order for Tamar to know where to be able to see her father-in-law. And the third question, which is why the seemingly additional words over Shimshon Hu'aymer, when maybe Rashi could have just used the word ksid, we just resolved by saying that it is important for us to understand that this idea of Shimshon going down, physically going down, was something that was repeated often in the story of Shimshon. Now, of course, for I think all of our favorite parts of the Sicha, which is the Yayin Shel Torah. And the Rebbe says that the Avoda of a person down here in this world is often described in the pasuk Mi Ya'ale Bahar Hashem. Who will ascend the mountain of Hashem? That we were put down in this world to be mountain climbers. And we need to climb and ascend the mountain of Hashem. And the Rebbe talks about that when you're climbing a mountain, you can't stop in the middle. Why? Because when you're on a slope, if you're not moving forward, you're inevitably going to slip back. It's not possible to remain status quo. Status quo equals that you're moving backwards. So even if, you know, you're at this moment, you can't take leaping bounds and move forward in huge steps, that's okay. There's a time for that as well. But even if you're not there right now, even if you just take tiny little steps forward, that will ensure that you are going up and not, chas v'shalom, slipping back. Because when we're talking about climbing the mountain of life, there's nothing in the middle. You're either up or you're going down. So the Rebbe is encouraging each and every one of us that every day, at every moment, our service in Hashem should be one of an upward trajectory. And the Rebbe actually brings a beautiful example from something that we'll experience at the end of this week on Hanukkah. Right? So we know that in Hanukkah, there's the notion of every day, Olam B'Kedusha. Every day we grow in our Avodah, in our holiness. At a physical level, and of course at a spiritual level, we bring light into this world. And the Rebbe says something very interesting. The Rebbe says, if on the third day of Hanukkah, you would decide to only light two candles, it's not that you're doing a status quo. Okay, it's the third day, but I'm remaining where I'm at from where I was at in two. No, the Rebbe says you're not in a neutral place. Because if you haven't added, if you haven't given to day number three, so to speak, what you gave to day number two, when you added from candle one to candle two, i.e. you contributed something more to day number two. If you're not going to contribute something more to day number three, and you're going to remain at day number three exactly where you were for day number two, then you're detracting from day number three. There's no such option of just remaining where you are. The Rebbe threw away the neutral option in the shift, you know, in the gear. The Rebbe says you're either going up or you're going up. That's my translation of that. But we know that if you're not going up, then you're coming down. Because if at day number three you're still lighting two candles, then you have detracted from day number three. And that's actually interesting. The Rebbe also says that in a sense you've detracted from day number two as well, because day number two has nothing unique to it anymore. If at day number three, you're still doing the same thing like day number two, then what was unique to day number two? So you've detracted from day number three, and sort of retroactively, you've also detracted from day number two. So the Rebbe encourages us in the same way that on Hanukkah, it's so obvious how we're able to add every single day, so too in all areas of our life, you know? We should all have atzlacha in being able to climb our mountains. And of course, when we mountain climb together, it makes it that much easier and that much more enjoyable. And as each one of us moves forward in our journey together, we will be zeiche to experience the promises of Olam Mashiach v'Har Tzion, ultimately, right? Lishvat is Har Esa v'Haisa l'Hashem Amlucha. We will enjoy this promise that we see in Avadia, where we will climb the ultimate mountain, the mountain of Har Tzion, and the whole world will recognize at that point v'Haisa l'Hashem Amlucha. Afreilich and Chanukah, everybody, and may it be that we take a merit to see this year the menorah lit in the Beis HaMikdash.